cliffcentral.com. Yeah, welcome to it. This is Black Life. My name is Dimisha Masha. And in the studio today, we've got, you know, a lady who you really want to listen to. You know what we do and how we do every Thursday on Black Life. That was Fela Kuti with Opposite People. I love that song because it's like talks about actors and everybody else. So let me introduce my first guest. Speaking of actors, film industry, Fela Kuti, if you are interested or have any interest in ever getting into the film industry, this is someone you definitely need to know. Don't ever forget this name. How are you doing, Dineo?
Hello, hello.
Hello. I must say, when I saw the name in the email and you're going to be coming to the studio, immediately I was like a little bit confused at first, but I remembered that the Sesotho version of spelling Dineo starts with an L.
Yes.
Do like white people generally get very confused when you tell them that your name is
Lineo? They call me Lineo.
I don't blame them though.
And if I'm going to ever see them again, I correct them. Otherwise, I don't care.
Otherwise, like whatever, yeah. All right. Well, you know, you're in the film industry. You've been doing this for like, well,
many years.
I mean, you've got 20 productions under your belt in various guises.
Yeah.
Ever been an actress?
No. Well, I was an extra
okay. In
a TV series that I did, and I suck. Like,
oh, okay. In your own worst TV series, you're an extra. So it's okay.
Because somebody didn't show up, and they're
all
like,
right,
okay, so come just...
So you gave yourself the
walk
job.
And talk. And,
yeah. That's the worst kind of nepotism, though. And that's probably why you sucked.
But no, I really sucked, because the idea of speaking proper Sesotho and walking and staring at that red light at the same time was like very scary.
Let me tell you something about speaking proper Sesotho, right? Yeah. It's probably one of the toughest languages out there in the world. People don't realize that proper Sesotho, you know, I've been playing Mosotho Man lately, and I hope I did it a little bit of justice, but if I didn't, my apologies to all the Sesotho people. It is not the easiest language, and you know, being from Pretoria, you can't just put in any word.
No,
it's Sesotho.
No. But and there's a difference between Sesotho and Sesotho.
It ain't that
Sesotho
the truth.
Is like,
okay,
much
so let's start at the beginning. Where did you grow up?
I was born in Vereeniging.
Okay.
So I'm from Everton originally.
Okay.
And then when I was 6, we moved to Lesotho. So I spent most of my formative years there. And only came back to South Africa when I was, I think, about 12 or 13.
Okay.
Yes.
12 or 13. That's when you came back to South Africa.
Yes.
And what was your experience like when you were outside of the country?
It was amazing. Like, I've just had the best life ever. And growing up in Lesotho at the time that we did, everything is amazing. It was so different to being in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
We're very shielded, just even at the school that we were at, but just shielded as young people. We lived in Lesotho where there was a black king.
Yeah.
So this idea of apartheid was, you know,
was
very, very foreign
for
to
you,
us.
Right?
You know, we only knew it when we got to the border, you know, and so it was really just a great existence.
Okay.
I really enjoyed my childhood.
Here's the thing, right, about everyone who's lived outside of South Africa growing up, especially in the 80s, when I suppose... I would say it was almost at the height of apartheid, especially with the state of emergency going on.
Mm.
How did it feel to live in a country where the first language, the primary language, was actually Sesotho? It was your language. How did that change you as a person?
I think it was normal for me because I didn't know any better. I was there from the age of 6. I can't remember anything that happened before then. So it was normal for me. Coming to South Africa at 11, 12, however old I was, that was the weirdness, you know, and also just wrapping my head around apartheid and racism. Like, I didn't understand racism until I got to South Africa.
Mm.
It had no significance in my life before that. We went to an international school where we had people from all over the world and all races. And even the way that South Africans spoke, the fact that they'd say, this black guy so-and-so and this white guy's, and
yeah,
I was like, that is so weird. Like, why does it matter what color they are? And I actually learned to speak like that. But
okay.
In Lesotho, it was just like Dumisha or David or whatever. It was never contextualized with the color of their skin.
I suppose
so
you guys, there were white people there though.
Lots, yeah.
Okay. And it was just, and it was normal. Like, you guys
very
just
normal.
Lived and it wasn't
yeah.
like, oh, look, there's a white person.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a black person.
Yeah.
Or I was accosted by 3 black people.
Oh, no.
No, none of that.
Mm-mm.
Okay. And are you Miss Sekelwane? Because I know you're married, right?
Yes.
So is that your maiden name or is that your surname?
It's my maiden surname.
Okay.
But I still use it for work. And at home.
Is that the name that you use in the lights? Dineos.
Dineos.
Sekelwane film.
Sounds very foreign.
Yeah, yes. Sounds pretty
but
cool.
You know, at home I'm Dineo Nkosi Dlamini and
Dineo Nkosi Dlamini. So you guys you crossed the other side, ne?
Yes.
Your hubby. He's Zulu. He's a Zulu guy.
He is Zulu and Swati. His dad is Swati. And his mom is Zulu, yes.
Did he grow up in like the Zulu areas?
Swaziland.
So he's like from there. It's not like he's from Soweto.
No, he's not from Soweto. He's like Swati guy. You know, just
Tell me about that cross-cultural thing. Because, you know, it seems like Sotho people and Ngunis, man.
We get along very well. Yeah.
Okay.
You know? Because I think Sotho women are generally very fierce. We're very sarcastic. We know exactly what we want. We don't care about anything.
Okay.
So when you meet a good liberated Nguni man, you know, he's able to handle you, you know.
Yeah.
I think others are not able to because they get very controlling.
Okay.
And we, Basotho, cannot be controlled. Like, we're very independent.
No, you cannot. You're too wild.
We're too wild.
Yes, you're untamable.
So he was very good. Like, he's one of my favorite people. And you know, I vote for Swatis and Zulus.
Okay, but he's a very laid back kind of guy. I think that was his thing,
yeah,
right? And of course, he is in the business in a way.
He is,
he's a voice that a lot of people recognize
on
a lot of commercials and brands and that sort of thing. How has that enhanced your relationship? I mean, you are a filmmaker and he's a voice artist and an actor as well.
Yeah. Well, I think he understands me more.
Yeah, he understands what
But
you
he's
do,
my
right?
biggest fan. So I think even if he was in a different industry altogether, it doesn't matter what I did and he did. It's really just about he's my biggest fan.
All right, cool.
You know,
and
so
you're obviously his biggest
fan
as well.
I'm his biggest. He's the best person in the world.
He's a great voice artist, I must say. He's one of those guys when he walks into the studio, you're like, oh no. Why did they call me? I mean, he's here already.
You are one of those.
Oh, thank you.
Top two. It's crazy.
Yeah, you know, I'm in top two, right? So it's crazy because I've known him for so many years, like almost decades now, from the studios.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that's where we always meet.
Yeah.
Okay. But anyway, this is about you. It's not about your man.
Mm-hmm.
What made you decide to get into film? I mean, you got into film way back in the day. You didn't just get into film.
Yeah.
You went and you got your bachelor's in motion picture medium at the South African School of Film.
Yes.
You did TV and drama, but you studied producing and creative directing. Am I right?
I started casting
directing.
Producing, but I mean, casting directing was just part of what I did.
Okay.
Because I'm a creative producer, but I do a lot of things. But how I got into it, I was actually studying accounting for 3 years. Well, accounting was studying me.
Okay,
and
where?
It spat me out.
Was it at Wits?
I don't know, at Natal Tech.
Oh, okay.
Because I graduated from high school very young. I was 15.
Wow.
So I had no idea who I was, what I wanted, you know. So my dad was like, just be an accountant.
Yeah.
Everybody else in my class was going to be an accountant. Like, let me try this out. And then one day when I was sitting miserable in my apartment trying to figure out what I want to do next with my life, I started going through like my money. And I said, what do I spend my money on? And I promise you, the last 10 rand I had, I'd spend it on a movie. Like, if it meant I wouldn't eat that week, I'd go watch a film. So I thought, hey, maybe this is what I really love. So I looked at schools. I applied to a school in New York. I got accepted. I thought, oh, I'm going to New York.
Awesome.
And my dad was like, oh, great. You're going to study film far, 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 far away.
Yeah.
But let's go to Joburg and see if there's any schools there.
How? But why are you getting in the way of
Because my dad loved me. He was very cool.
Fair enough.
And then I found out about AFTA.
Okay.
And when I went for the interview, the film that they gave me to watch and assess was Witness. And I'd been studying Witness for 2 years.
Okay.
So I thought, you know, this is it. This is where I'm meant to be. And that's what happened. So I decided to go to AFTA, and that is when life truly, truly began for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. But you must have been one of the first batches of people going to AFTA at the time. It wasn't like a big school like
no.
it is now, right?
No.
How was it like being one of the first people to go to AFTA? You didn't know much about it.
No. I knew nothing, but it was really exciting because it was a very small group of people.
Yeah.
I think we were the second batch. And we just had the best time.
Mm-hmm.
And we worked. Like,
it must be like it was all new. It wasn't tainted. It was innocent. You were
it
just
was
there
very innocent.
For the film,
yes,
right? It
yes,
was all about
yes.
the film. It was all about making films.
Like, there were no heels and makeup. And like, you
yeah.
worked.
Back then, it was just, you
yeah.
just running
it
around.
It was like
right?
working for a production company and having the pleasure of paying them to work for them.
Ah,
that's what we go for days with no
good,
sleep.
Don't you think that's a good business model, Monami?
Amen.
We should
I
do that.
Any day. Zero labor.
Let's open a magazine, right? Like a magazine school. but actually what these kids do is they work
they
for your magazine.
Yes.
Yeah. And then and they pay you for it.
Perfect.
What?
Perfect.
Let's do it.
Perfect. Yeah, and we can bring all these Americans because they like do wildlife, so we'll just pretend it's a wildlife magazine that they write for.
You see.
And now,
give them
I
one
like
page.
That.
Here's the thing though. I mean, your
I
dad.
I like it a lot.
You were studying accounts.
Yeah.
And now you're suddenly going to this weird place with all these artists. Mm. And you're going to be studying film. How do you feel about that?
I mean,
was he a little bit taken aback?
He walked in and he's like, these people are really dirty. Are you sure you want to be here? Like, nobody's really washed, you know?
Yeah,
I'm like,
yeah.
We're just tired. But he loved the fact that I was happy.
Okay.
At some point, I'd convinced him to open a film school. And then he was like, nah. I don't know anything about film. I'm not going to do that.
Your dad was radical.
You know?
But here's the thing, right? What kind of films did you want to make when you first got into film school? Because we all have these films that we wanted to make when we got in, right? And then you get older and like it changes.
It's always been the same thing.
Okay.
I live in a happy bubble.
Okay.
So I've always wanted to make happy films with happy endings.
That's awesome.
Yes. I've never been into the painful people die and there's AIDS and war and stuff.
Oh, that's so refreshing. Yeah. I can exhale. That's the thing. I always think that we make that mistake in this country. When we make films, we want to show the hardships and the pain.
Yes.
And then at the end of the film, there's no even like a catharsis. Something really amazing happens and the pain stops. It's like, and the pain continues.
Yes.
That's Africa. We're always in pain.
Africa.
No, but we're not, dog. I didn't grow up like that. I know that there's pain all around, but it's like, I always say it's where you point your camera.
Dog,
it's like you're where you turn and where you look.
But your family shielded you from a lot. I mean,
no,
Saint
my
Albans,
God. No. Before I went, let me tell you something. Before I went to St. Albans,
right?
I was actually, I grew up in Mamelodi and Kgarankuwa. In the tough streets of Mamelodi and Kgarankuwa, right? But
tough?
I was still very happy.
You yourself are now going back to the tough.
No, here's my thing. I'm just saying it was tough because that's what it was.
Yeah.
But it wasn't tough because I was a child in a happy environment.
Exactly.
I mean, my aunt ran a shebeen at my grandmother's house where I lived with my parents in the backyard in a Zozo.
Mm.
Okay? It doesn't get more real than that. And then my other aunt was a real pantola. You know, she was like Mshoza because she had a pantola. And every other night... she was like that, dog. And like every other night, the guy would come and they would fight. It was crazy and there were gunshots. And then even while I was going to like Whips and St. Albans or whatever, it was in the height of like the state of emergency.
Yeah.
So you got to see the hippos in the township when you were back home.
Mm.
You got to hear about people getting burned. You know, people got shot, but that doesn't mean that there wasn't moments
there was
of pure joy and happiness amongst that.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
And I think that's the thing for me. I'm all about the happy environment. Like I'm very picky about the people I hang out with. I'm very picky about the people that I work with as well. Because I love positive people. I'm a very positive person. I'm a can do, anything is possible. And as long as you love what you're doing, you'll always win. And as you know, I've been raising money for my film forever.
Okay. We're gonna get into your film just now. We got somebody online who is Noremek. I don't know.
Nor-mac.
He says Nomek. Oh, that's even better. Dineo who? It's Dineo Sekelwane. Sekelwane. Am I saying it right?
Sekelwane.
Sekelwane. Dineo Sekelwane. All the way from the Tabin. Talisoto. Gimonesu. Rimona he. Bua he. Monabisi. Tete.
King
Munna. Okay, what's with someone need? Mbulele hemme,
hore
o qalile kae ka di film tsa
tsa
hao. How qeta ko film school.
O don ka ka jwale. Mosebetsi wa ka wa pele ne ko fuwe ke Peter Ndoro.
Is from Peter Ndoro
company. Ebe so Peter Ndoro Productions.
Peter Ndoro Productions.
It was called Peter Ndoro Productions.
Ke le ka sebetsa ho yena le motse pedi ka botse tharo. Ke le
producer. I worked there for
2 years as a producer
and directing some inserts as well.
Okay, we can switch back to English.
We've
proved that you can do
it.
She even said limotepe.
Not mingwa. There'd be like 3 interpreters.
There would be. Hey, there'd be a Zulu one and a Shangaan one.
Random interpreter. I like this.
No, this is good. So what happened was that a friend of mine asked me to find, she had just moved back from the States and she was looking for a job.
Okay.
Then I was helping her send her CVs and stuff, and I called somebody at Mnet to send the CV, and that lady was the first white person to pronounce my name properly. She was like, oh, Dineo. I was like, oh, that's great.
How do
you
know her?
Eileen Sandrock. She is the GM of...
There you go.
what is a
Multi-choice?
No. Sasani Studios.
Yes.
So we started talking, and then she was asking me, so what do you do? I was like, I'm a producer. I said, why don't you send your CV? I was like, I'm not really looking for a job. I have a job. I was like, send it anyway. And I sent it to her. She called me in for an interview, and we really got along really well.
Okay.
And she gave me the job, you know, which is horrible. But anyway, good for me, but not good for my friend.
Oh, okay. Okay. What was so wrong with the job?
No, the job was great.
Oh, but
you know,
friend
I had been applying
one...
for a friend of mine.
Oh,
you
man.
Know?
Sorry,
so she
friend.
Missed out.
Sorry, friend. Are you guys still friends? Can
no.
we still call her?
No, no. Okay.
No, we broke
probably
up.
Not. Oh, yeah, okay. After that.
But okay. I started working as the supervising producer for KTV then.
Okay.
So doing children's television.
Did you fire me?
No.
Were you on KTV?
It was after your time.
Was it after 2?
Were you on KTV?
Yes.
Oh, dog, yes. I was.
All right, okay, I remember around about the time when I was on Channel O, right? You on KTV. Okay, I remember now.
He's funny, ain't he?
Sorry, I just wasn't watching children's TV at the time anymore.
Ah,
I was
right,
trying to
right. Yeah, you were supposed to be making kids. Now at age 100, you're making kids.
I was living my life
right.
to the
no,
last number.
Life. So I started there, and then we started Go. The channel, which is now Vuzu, was
yeah.
very different though.
Okay.
Vuzu is much better.
I mean, you were channel head at the time, right?
Well, I was supervising producer for the channel.
Okay.
I then moved to Channel O as a programming manager.
All right.
Excuse me. And then from there, I left to go freelance and worked as a creative producer, doing all sorts of things. For the SABC, we made a few dramas.
You made some dramas in your time.
Yes, my most favorite things.
20 productions, that's some serious production, girl.
My most favorite things.
I mean, you made Mthunzi Wantaba.
Yes, Mthunzi Wantaba was really, really such a great experience. Okay. I learned a lot about myself, about people. It was pulled off air, so it was very dramatic. It got pulled off air, and they had to do a talk show because it was very contentious. It was about
what was it about?
Young boys going to the mountain,
yes.
And one of them ran away and went to hospital. So there were a lot of traditional leaders that were very upset. But unfortunately, when they started complaining, they hadn't actually watched the series. They just heard from someone who heard from someone who heard from someone that there was something graphic, and there was nothing graphic about it. It was actually a very positive story about young men going through circumcision, but also just about the people who take advantage of them. And I think once they got to see the program, there were certain things that we had to change, and went back on air, and it had a very good, a positive impact.
Okay.
I think on audiences at the time.
I mean, then you went on to do Redemption, which won 3 SAFTA awards.
Oh yes, Redemption was with Tongue Productions with Tandy Brewer and Bridget Pickering.
Okay.
And that for me was just a great thing because, you know, it was Tandy's project in the beginning. Like, she came up with the idea. And she got me involved because I was a Christian, mainly,
yes.
And because she knew me. And I was a producer that had worked with her. She was one of my writers in a previous project. But what I really loved about that, because I love, I won't call it religious programming, but I like spiritual programming.
Okay.
And with everything that I get involved with, I want to be able to affect at least one person. And the most positive thing about that is that I was sitting in a room with my cousin and someone, a friend of hers that I didn't know. And we started talking about different things, and she was talking about suicide, and she told me that, you know, the one night she was having such a hard time, she was about to commit suicide that night, and she was sitting in front of her TV trying to figure out how she's going to do it. And Redemption came on, and she watched this episode, and she decided
wow.
to live. And I was just like, oh my gosh. And I was sitting there like, this is why you make drama.
Yeah.
This is why you make these stories, is to encourage people. And this is why I like happy stories and
okay.
happy endings.
Exactly.
But things that will encourage and change people's perspectives.
Because with something that has a happy ending,
yeah.
they live happily ever after, even though it seems like it's a bit fairy tale,
yeah.
but it actually does happen. Isn't that what we all live for?
Yeah.
Isn't that the hope that
exactly.
we all need in life?
Exactly.
And I'm sure we can show that in everyday
yeah.
Television and programming.
Yeah.
Well, another one that was a major was Entabeni,
oh, yes.
which was basically a Shakespearean miniseries.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about that, because when it came out in 2008,
yeah.
it was huge.
It was. I mean, that was my baby. It was my most favorite thing to
it
work
won
on.
6 SAFTA awards.
It was really cool. I don't remember how many awards it won, but for me, it was the biggest thing because I'll tell you why. You know, when the night before we were supposed to submit the proposal to SABC, my director disappeared. He went to Durban and was gone. And I was sitting there.
Did he go to the Durban July?
I have no idea what he was doing there. And I
okay.
was sitting there like, I knew I had the concept and the story. And my boyfriend, who is Simpiwe, my husband now,
yeah.
And I was saying, I don't know what to do.
Shout out to Simpiwe. Shout out to
Simpiwe. And he said, listen, just write your own proposal, submit it on your own, just go ahead with it, you know? So I wrote the whole concept. Like, I did not sleep the whole night trying to get this document ready. It was sent to SABC, and, you know, we got shortlisted, we pitched, and we got the job, which was really so amazing for me to start something from scratch, just from a great idea and see it all the way through to it being on television and having the same beautiful effect that it had on audiences. And every year, I mean, it's been repeated, I think, every year since then, at least two or three times.
Yeah.
Which is just...
Do you get paid every time it gets repeated?
Supposedly.
But not really, hey?
Not really, in theory.
You know, we're going to get into that. I want to first hear the good news, because that's the thing, right, about our industry. And we have to talk about it. Like, your experiences about this industry from the other side, as a producer. A lot of people think that it's the producers who've messed up this industry.
Oh, no.
But before we go there, let's talk a little bit more about Entabeni. For example, which particular Shakespeare stories did you guys redo?
We did Macbeth.
Yes.
Yeah, which is always my favorite, you know. Love, deception, all those things are my favorite things to look into. So we did Macbeth, and we just had just the best actors on that show. We had
a lot of fun. Lady Macbeth?
Lady Macbeth was Zikhona. So like,
Zikhona was amazing in that. She looked beautiful in that.
She was amazing. Yeah. It was directed by Norman Maguire.
Yeah.
One of my favorite directors. And it was really just amazing to work on, you know.
What you guys did with that, especially with the Lady Macbeth character and with Zikhona, you took the look, because it was a time when everybody on TV kind of was starting to look kind of the same. And you had to like have a nice weave, kind of almost be a yellow bone or going in that direction. And you guys went totally the opposite direction.
Yeah.
And it just popped and it was amazing.
Because we were looking for great talent.
Yeah.
And Zikhona was a great talent, you know. And also because we were working in such strenuous situations, you know, with such budgets, you need people who are committed to their craft.
Yeah.
And she's one of those people who are just really committed.
But in terms of how we see ourselves, I mean, everyone's looking at Lupita now and going, as if she's the first. But you guys did it before then, even.
Oh, yeah.
And how did that change the way, I think, I'd say even black women looked at themselves?
Well, I really don't know, because for me, it was just, you know, the reality has always been like, you need to pick people who are beautiful, and people who are beautiful are people who know who they are.
Okay.
You know, it's a spirit thing. It's not a physical thing. You know, the whole yellow bone thing, like, I love yellow people.
My wife is a yellow bone.
I love dark skin people, you know, but I think, you know, that for me is, it just shows, it's a thing of apartheid as well, where we have gone so far away from who we are, of appreciating who we truly are, that, you know, now we work with labels, that this one is better than that one. If she's light-skinned, she's better. And it's social conditioning as well. So I don't blame anyone who's into
it. I find that after 20 years in the industry, it's sort of like, it's a cycle.
Yeah.
I mean, when I first came into the industry, it was the time that the guys had to be very light, like it was the Will Smith look.
Mm.
The 2 years later, it was the very dark. And very tall and very African Jimon Hansu, you know, look. and then it just, every year it just kind of changes. And then after a while, you just get used to the fact that it's a cycle, but it doesn't really matter, because you can transcend the labels. Yeah. You can transcend what the industry is doing by just being yourself.
Exactly.
And I'm hoping that, you know, as black film producers, we can get to a point where it's not about this year, this is what we're doing, but it's about, for this particular role, this is who we're looking for.
Exactly.
And we're not really necessarily trying to say anything by either casting a dark-skinned somebody or a light-skinned somebody.
Yeah.
We are just getting the best person for the role at that time that makes sense in terms of the character.
Yeah, that's really it. That's really
how important has that been for you as a female filmmaker? I mean, you know, we see Hollywood, and in Hollywood, every woman has got to be super skinny. You've got to be like a size zero to make it.
Yes.
And that's what has been perpetuated there, that you got to look a certain way. Once you're over 30, you're kind of over the hill, unless you're Charlize Theron and a few others. But generally, by 35, make way for the younger ones, because that's who we want to see.
Or stay in shape.
Oh, stay in shape, right?
Yeah.
But I'm trying to represent other people in this world who are also relevant. Okay.
Sorry, I just heard Dumisha in shape. I was like, well.
And it's around... Round is a shape.
Round is a shape.
Which
is
about to switch off my mic.
I've just actually turned you up. I want you to just... I'm giving you enough rope, Monabisi, because sooner or later, I know you're just going to...
Hang yourself, buddy. But I think for me, you know, there are certain realities. If you're going to be a surgeon, you have to go to school. There's certain things that you have to learn. And when it comes to film and television, I think it's important to tell authentic stories that feature authentic, real people. But in terms of the optics of film, like the realities are, you have to have great skin. There are certain things that you as an actor have to commit to, and you know this. You're going to have great skin. You have to be in shape, depending on the role. But I think also as producers and writers and creators, we also have to start representing more people. Not everybody, like you know, a big portion of the world is not skinny. That's not reality. But where we are now, our perceptions, as warped as they are, people see certain sizes as beautiful, but it's not everyone. That's that's what we're selling to the world. But if we start telling authentic stories with authentic characters that reflect our true world, I think everyone will be as accepting. But we've all fallen into, oh no, if you look this way.
But here's my thing. Here's my thing. As an African filmmaker, we seem to always follow the American trends. I remember working with Lupita for the first time in On Sugar in 2009. And I was like blown away by how beautiful this girl is. And you know, I kept thinking when I was working with her the whole time that she's so beautiful, but I bet you in South Africa she'd never work. She wins an Oscar and now she's the new beautiful. Everyone wants to work with
her. She's
well
marketed,
right? But the white people in America have to accept her and say, guys, here's a beautiful black person for you. And now black people are like, oh, you guys are right.
Beautiful.
She is beautiful. You know what? We should do that more often. When are we going to start doing that ourselves? And when you say optically, you know, aesthetically, when are we going to start pushing our own aesthetics?
That's what I'm saying. Like, we have to start writing stories that reflect our own world. But right now, I think as South African producers, we have to start opening up more to markets where we're accepted, where we can get, we can make the rules. Because right now we've all been focusing on America, and it makes sense why, because they've got the numbers. And the reality of our industry is that we don't have numbers. Just in terms of population size. So we will not, we'll never be able to compete with China, with India, with America, with Nigeria. But we have Nigeria as a friend to us. We have this audience that will accept us, but we don't make use of it.
No, we don't.
You know, we're focusing on America only. And Nigeria, for me, is where South Africans should be focusing on, because that's where we can really build something together.
How important then is it for us to collaborate with the rest of Africa? I mean, you look at the Ethiopian film industry, which is coming up, and that's growing to become, I think, if it's not the second largest at the moment in Africa, going towards the largest, it soon will be. And I think what they've done that's so incredible, that side, is all the cinemas in Ethiopia only show Ethiopian films. I don't know how they got that right, whether it's legislation or whether it's people. But if you go to a cinema in Ethiopia, you might find one international film. The rest are all Ethiopian.
That's what China did as well. I mean, they have a quota system, which is what us as producers have been trying to push in South Africa. It's not an easy thing to do because, firstly, I mean, we have a lot of challenges, but I think it's something that we can overcome if we really commit to it.
Danielle, can I just ask a question? I've been dying to ask this question. How, like, okay, so I saw the first African dance film or South African dance film.
Yeah, Me Move.
Yes. Okay. I love the two guys. I love Wandile and but it left a lot to be desired for me from a choreography perspective to say, did we actually hit the potential of any, for me, it didn't even speak of African dance, you know.
Isn't that the fear that we're talking about now? We don't set the trend. We just, we follow the trend that, that America has set because we're too afraid.
What trend was that? Well, I didn't have an identity. I had an identity crisis when I left that film.
But I think the one thing that I've accepted a long time ago, that I'm not always a target audience. And
okay, but you watch like 8 to 10 movies a week.
Yeah, but that's, I'm not the, the target audience most of the time. We want to reach out to other people who are not filmmakers.
Right.
Nobody makes films for filmmakers because we're messed up and we have problems and we're jealous and we're crazy. So you want to make a film for your audience. But where we need to start in South Africa is building our audience. Okay. The Afrikaans market, I mean, they have it right. You just produce an Afrikaans film, it will get watched and it will make a profit.
With
black
films,
cultural
thing, though?
It's a thing of culture, and it's also a thing of access as well, and finances, because most of our population is in townships and the cinemas are very far away from them.
Yeah.
And just having to get onto a taxi, pay X amount of money, get to a cinema, buy popcorn, and then get a taxi back. Like, that's a different thing to getting into my little Polo and going to my to the cinema with five of my friends. You know, so that's, those are the realities that we face as an industry, as a black film industry in this country.
And quality assurance? I mean,
is that even important, though? Because
here's
the thing. But here's the thing. This is what I found difficult as a filmmaker and a television maker or content producer, whatever, in South Africa, is you know, being a filmmaker, you go, oh, you know, I would never make that. I'd never make that. And that's the stuff that actually does the best. Yeah. And when you think about it, you go, actually, if you want to make money, make that. Yeah. When you want to do something for your friends and your family and to feel good about yourself, then make the quality stuff.
Yeah, I think I agree with both. And this is, this for me is where I think we need to, because it's all about the audience in the end. What does the audience want? Yeah. What does the audience consume right now?
But it's a lot of just the films. I mean, come on.
No, but that's, you're not the target audience though. But you're not the target audience.
You're not the target audience. I'm sorry, Monobis. If I make a movie, I'm not making it for you.
Yeah.
You're too busy anyway. You're probably not going to come to the cinema.
Exactly.
When it's time to hire the movie, chances are, you'll probably find a Yiffy torrent somewhere and you'll tell me how you watched it. And if not, then you'll get it maybe on box office. But there's like one or two of you and that's about it. Luna, what cheese boy? I'm not making a movie for
so,
you guys.
So it's okay for Zuma to say,
clever blacks.
Clever blacks. You don't
support
blacks.
Us. You don't, clever blacks don't support other clever blacks.
You know, and that's the thing. But I think also part of when it comes to cinema, we have Tyler Perry films that make a good profit here.
Yeah.
But the difference between our films as being South Africans and Tyler Perry films, they're well marketed. In South Africa, South African, black South African films are not well marketed.
Right.
So even Wandile's target market, the Hear Me Move target market, half of them did not even know about this film. They still don't. They've never heard about it.
Right.
Because it wasn't marketed to them.
Right, right.
You know, where films like, that come from outside the country,
yeah.
they have all the social media, they have all these things that we know about even before they come here.
Right.
So by
right,
the time
right.
they get to South Africa, very little has to be done.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
we actually have to start building an audience. And that's a very, very, it's a difficult undertaking.
Yeah.
So I think that's where we need to start. And this is why for me, like my focus now is like with the markets in Africa that are working, Ethiopia, Nigeria, why don't we get partnerships with these markets where they have their systems are in place?
Mm.
I mean, as South Africans, we know we're good at quality.
Yeah.
But partner with a Nigerian producer, he's got the numbers, you've got the quality.
Okay.
You know, that's when the industry can really be born.
I hope he doesn't bootleg the film, right?
Well, then, no, but I think, you know, even, but you know what? No, but even if your film gets bootlegged, here's the reality.
By the producer.
But even if it does get bootlegged,
yes.
you're building a name for yourself.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Because even with the bootlegs, you'll be able to make a bit of money, more money than you'll ever make in South Africa.
The DTI wants their money back, though, and the bootleggers aren't going to give it to you.
No, the DTI don't want their money back.
Oh, really?
No.
Okay, we're
going
to
it's the IDC that wants their money back.
Oh, the
DTI are my heroes. Like, they are the best people in the world. And I think if it wasn't of them, it would be very difficult for black people to, it would be impossible for black people to make films in this country.
We would not be making films at all. We still wouldn't be making, even though we make like one or two a year, we wouldn't even be making that.
I rejected my application.
To make a film. To make a film.
To make a film.
Not to make a film.
To
fund our magazine. Oh, it doesn't matter. Okay. Same difference.
Anything,
I just heard DTI and my ears just started ringing. Like,
and you got mad.
Energy.
You didn't know why.
Yeah, wait.
We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about funding, and also we're going to talk about My Zulu Wedding in a second. But first, we got to get into style tips, because that's what we talk about every week right here on Black Life. So, Monabisi, all right, we're talking about optically what works, aesthetically. You must pay attention to your supporting pieces. Some sweaters are lean and others are big and chunky, okay? The first rule of thumb, my man, is that your top and bottom halves need to match. I would keep telling you this, and you think it's because I'm from Pretoria.
Man, okay, let me not go there.
Tanto
okay,
Omechis, their boss.
Please,
if you're wearing
Usa.
I'm matching. I hope you notice, right? I'm matching my blue jeans. There's blue on my sneakers. And then I'm wearing a blue shirt with a blue hat.
And an orange.
But I'm wearing an orange jacket.
Orange.
With
Pitorima
a shoe
Panzo.
That has orange and brownish highlights. Okay? With a brown belt. Thank you. Moving on.
Are you trying to...
Wait! Don't wear a fisherman's sweater with a beautiful silk and wool suit.
I need to husa.
Instead, wear it with something as casual as cargoes or jeans. Or dress it up with a blazer. Why are you woosering in the middle of me telling people what they must wear?
Because I really need to. Jesus needs to come into this room and sort this out.
You're not matching very well.
What
today.
Do you mean I'm not matching?
What are you matching? What are you matching today?
Michelle,
you're wearing
All-Star.
A blue jacket.
Blue jacket.
Okay. Well,
blue All-Star.
Blue All-Star with a blue jacket.
Yes. Okay. And khakis.
Okay.
No,
khakis.
I disagree
no,
with the matching
cool.
as well.
Namangas. Yes. It's only Pitori people that match, eh?
What are you talking about? I thought you were doing me, man. Why are you doing that?
Orange jacket with blue.
Orange goes very. It's a complementary color. You
it
must
is,
know your complementary colors, Monabisi.
You look very dapper, though. I should tell
thank
you.
Thank you. Thank you.
You know, you should.
Thank you.
Not
jealous.
Have said that.
Down, Monabisi.
You should not have said that.
Why are you eating me jealous?
That. You should not have said.
Listen, keep it simple, Mfana. You want a wardrobe that looks great on you, but don't overdo it. Don't wear more than 3 pieces of jewelry or more than 3 colors. You see, that's why I only wear 2 colors. Don't dress like a rock star unless you're in a band. Those are my Shangan days when I wear like 5 colors.
You know, somebody was actually taken to the what's this? Human CCMA. Rights Watch.
Yeah.
Because he was busy that. Shanganing this.
We love Shangan.
No, but yeah? I can they say rock. It because I've got a Shangan family and I'm part Shangan. So why
people have trained you? I've got fair. Do you know
some of
Vusi?
My best friends are Shangan?
Yes,
but I just said I'm like, part Shangan.
Do you know?
So I can say what I like about Pedi people. I can say what I like about Tswana people. I can say what I like about Zulu people and Swati people. Those are my people.
And Khosa, and Shangan your people.
Well, Khosa's, I'm married to a Khosa, and my baby's gonna be hard Khosa.
Listen, so I love Khosa.
Khosa, Khosa ne? He's you can just see he melts. You know,
oh, I melt when I think of Khosa.
Oh yeah,
that's
ooh,
why
Khosa girl.
Yeah, that's why we and I are. You know what I'm saying?
What? Okay. Yeah, because she's Suti, you know?
Yeah.
But Suti girls also do something to me, eh?
They are closer people.
They are. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, but
they're actually
yeah.
like the same, but
we're separated
language.
By a fence.
Yeah, mm. exactly.
Yeah. Okay. More like kacha snake.
Language one. I want to
you know, I've got 20 questions to ask you. Okay, so
we're gonna talk
like
about the Ford Mustang later. Yes. Not really, ne?
Yeah, we are.
Okay, we'll talk about it. Okay, but first, do the 20 questions.
Okay, mm-hmm. So are you ready?
Yeah.
Nope,
you're not ready.
No, I am.
Okay, we'll wait till you're ready.
I'm ready.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Drum roll.
Okay.
Shucks. Hold up. Wait. Let me get the drum roll ready. Why don't you warn me, man?
Hey, T-Money.
Yeah. Okay. Hold up. Here comes the drum roll.
The Gautrain hasn't reached mumps yet, ne? So please,
it's
you
coming,
need to
though.
Catch up. Eh?
I don't know if I've got a drum roll here, though, but I'm going to try fine. I'm going to obviously, don't worry. How about a harp?
This guy's random.
We love random.
I couldn't find a drum roll. Oh, okay. Here we go. There you go.
Ding. Let's go.
Okay.
So, what's the funniest moment in your life?
Oh my gosh! Every day is the funniest moment in my life.
Does anyone vanish with a trace?
Yes.
why is there an expiry date on sour cream?
Because it goes off.
Do you think people from Ricoffee get a coffee break?
No.
Did Adam and Eve have navels?
Yes.
Do illiterate people get the full effect of the alphabet soup?
Yes.
Are you going to call me after this?
No.
Has a guy ever asked you to marry him?
Yes.
Do you have wild fantasies?
Yes.
Okay, now my 20 questions are like going, eh? Would you go out of your way to help a friend?
Of course.
How much money do you hope to make in life?
I hope to make $300 billion.
What's your favorite sports car?
Oh, I don't know anything about cars.
Which habits are you most proudest of breaking?
Overeating.
Do you think fish get thirsty?
No.
What is the opposite of opposite?
Opposite.
What word starts with F and ends with UCK?
I don't know that kind of English.
Okay, it's called fire truck. have you ever been arrested?
Never.
Do you shy away from real love?
Oh, I love love.
Do you like going to parties?
I love parties.
Do you think my friends are hot?
Some of them.
Oh! She did well, dog.
Well done, Danelle. That was amazing.
Well done, Danelle.
That was amazing. But right now, let's get into your movie, man. Zulu Wedding. My Zulu Wedding. Or your Zulu Wedding. Mm-hmm. Everybody's Zulu Wedding. Everybody loves a good Zulu Wedding.
Yeah.
What's the story about?
The story is about a South African girl that grew up in the US and she gets engaged to her American beau, then has to come home for the lobola ceremony and finds out she's been promised to an 80-year-old Zulu chief.
Oh my.
And she tries to stow away in a young man's car to get on the compound so she can convince him, the Zulu chief, to leave her alone. But she falls in love with this young man who turns out to be the Zulu chief's son.
Oh
so in the end, she has to choose between the two men. Yeah, that's
and she does the right thing, right?
She does the right thing.
Both of them?
Yes.
That's right. Yeah.
Menage a what?
Yeah.
Okay. Here's my thing, right? I mean, that's a beautiful, it's a rom-com.
Yeah.
We need that, you know, black love. What made you go want to write a story like that?
I'm very interested in like cultural stories.
Yeah.
you know, I'm Mosotho, my husband is Swati. Mm-hmm. So even during our lobola, it was just very different how we do things. You know, I'm not very traditional.
Okay.
And I really just love characters. So the story always starts with a character, and it actually started with a very painful experience for me.
Mm-hmm.
My cousin was raped, and I had to take her to hospital.
I'm sorry.
And when we got there, it was the first time I'd ever seen those prick tests.
Mm.
And whenever something bad happens, I'll go to my happy place. I'll go to my little bubble and I imagine a happier world. And while she was getting this test, I just imagined a friend of mine, Makhano Mamabolo, being on a date and pricking the date with this AIDS test. Say,
that's my
okay,
sister-in-law kind of thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So she pricks this guy. This is in my imagination.
Makhano would do that though.
Yeah, to see if he's positive or not.
Exactly.
Because otherwise would, the date will not continue.
But also she would run through the 20 questions cause
yes,
to see if, like, it's a prick test. To
exactly,
see if he's a prick,
it's a prick
or not.
Test, okay. Yeah. So that's where the story started. And I told about this. We had a good laugh. And I started writing the story around this character who was a traffic cop, like very erratic, really crazy, did really crazy things. But as the story developed, she had a sister. And the story developed more into the sister story than her story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but there's another one that we're writing called Mabu, who's the character in the film. So
was
really
Makhano involved in the writing?
No, she wasn't.
Oh, okay.
But she's part of the cast.
Oh.
Yes.
Awesome. Yeah. And now when you cast international, because I think that's fantastic that mm-hmm. you've thought of a way of getting around this whole thing. Because, you know, every South African film that we do,
yeah.
And especially the historical ones, mm-hmm. we go, let's cast this great American actor mm-hmm. as Nelson Mandela or Steve mm-hmm. Biko or
yeah.
whoever, and
yeah.
then it just totally doesn't work.
Yeah.
As opposed to, let's cast an American who actually plays an American.
Yeah.
Let's not make it too difficult.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and that's what you guys did. Which is
did.
A great marketing plan
yeah.
because obviously then it opens up the American market,
exactly.
but also keeps it real because
exactly.
he's playing an actual American.
Yes,
you're not getting
but,
like
C-pop. But I also want to address this thing. I know, like, I'll be very unpopular for saying this as an
okay.
actor sitting in front of me.
That's
I think
okay.
as South Africans, there are certain realities that we need to deal with, and it's once again our numbers. So as much as it can anger us that these Americans play South African parts, the reality is we do not have the numbers to support these films. So for me, if I wanted to make money as a South African, like, I need to focus on markets that are working. So my focus is Nigeria, Ethiopia, and the African American market. So for the South Africans who are like, stop casting Americans, write your own movie and cast South Africans. Mm.
But here's my thing,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't worked in terms of the box office.
Yeah.
None of the movies that is historically
well,
cast
I mean,
Americans
they have
okay,
because I think what
we focus on
the opening week and but we don't look at the life of the film because
okay.
a film can go for 20 years and yeah. actually make good money. I mean, I heard a story about Faith Like Potatoes, which was released on DVD. And it's never been released theatrically, but it made, apparently, I don't know, this is unsubstantiated, it made like 30 million in America.
Did they have an American in that?
No.
Oh, okay.
And this is my
Funny.
Point.
Mm-hmm.
And my point is, like, whatever film you want, however you want to do it your way.
Yes.
But don't be judging other people
okay.
for
That's
their
fair
hustle
enough.
Because it's really difficult to make films. It's really, really difficult. And until we have audiences that can support what we're trying to do, until we can live off our craft in South Africa, people must just sit down.
That's fair enough. But I mean, I'm on both sides. I'm as a producer and as well as an actor, and I've done enough of those films to say, even in thus far, they
yeah.
haven't really worked like they were supposed to. They didn't like light up the world, and if anything, they actually became that blip mm-hmm. on that star's, you know, film career. That oh, don't mention that one. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I imagine now if I went and saw Tay Diggs and he's doing great work, he's on The Good Wife. And
oh,
I said,
yeah.
remember Drum? He'd be like, shut the nigga. You know what I'm saying?
But I think Drum, though, was also the time it was released in.
And that was one of the better ones, by the way.
Yes,
I think Tay Diggs at least tried.
Yeah.
I saw Winnie with Terrence Howard and Jennifer Hudson.
Yeah.
That was a big mistake.
Yeah. Okay.
And
I agree with that.
I'm trying to say is the problem is not casting outside of South Africa.
Mm.
The problem is casting just for the box office. Then you're not being honest and you're not being truthful as a
filmmaker.
You're
trying to make money.
But
there's a difference. But there's a difference between, for me, it's just like, there are people who manufacture Porsches or Fords or whatever. We don't really judge them much because they're quite clear. They're trying to make money. And for me, I'm not going to knock any producer's hustle. Let them do them. I will do me. And my focus as a South African producer is really about growing the South African market. And I will try all I can to do that. And I think part of where we win as producers is by working together,
yes.
by supporting each other, But as South Africans, we're so used to just knocking each other out. Not even like pulling down. We want to knock each other out.
Like, I don't want you to exist anymore.
Yeah.
This whole market is mine.
Exactly. Instead of saying, why don't we get together and start, you know, pooling our money together and say, Dumisho, you want to make this film. How do I help you while raising money for my film, raise money for yours? And we have a slate of films that we're collectively working towards. And you do you, however way you want to do it, whether it's for American market and the Americans cast, it doesn't matter. But we're going to support you because in the end, we want the industry to work. We want people to have jobs and make money.
But you see, here's my thing, right?
I agree. For once in my life, I agree with a guest.
Yeah. And I'm the one who's on the other side. Don't you think that we've got to listen to our market? We've got to listen to the people.
In South Africa, there is no market.
In South Africa, there is no market.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So if you're going to make a film for South Africa, you might have a problem unless you're making an Afrikaans film.
Yes.
However, even the American market, we have to understand that because here's the thing, right? Leonardo DiCaprio can come here and play a white South African.
Yeah.
Because actually, even in America, the major film market is the white film market.
Yes.
So, and Leonardo is at the top of his game that way. So go for it. Plus, also, he's speaking English in a South African accent. White South Africans might think, nah, that's not the best South African accent.
But he tried.
But white Americans would be like, wow, Leonardo, like, kicked that out the park, man. I think we've gone wrong when duplicating it with, I suppose, black film stars is, I think maybe it's the level of commitment. I'm not sure. But as an actor, I think when I watch them, I just see the level of commitment is not quite the same.
Yeah.
I'm not knocking anybody for doing what they did.
Yes, you are.
Well, okay, fine then. I am. But the thing is, like, you use South African money.
Yeah.
Like, let's take Long Walk to Freedom.
Yeah.
You use South African money. Your major line items on that budget were out of South Africa.
Yeah.
So our money, our tax money, that could have made your film, my film, and everyone else's film, went to the UK, basically. And very little of it went to America. But nonetheless, it went out. That return still hasn't come back yet.
They've made their money back.
Where?
They haven't made box office yet. Because, I mean,
the thing. Like, I think sometimes we focus on the wrong thing. Box office is not everything. I'm looking at the life of a film, 20 years. If you're saying in 20 years something has not come up, then yes, that's a problem. But you have to look past opening week.
But I can't make my film now. You're still waiting for money for your Zulu wedding.
And I'm going to wait.
That's probably because that money was used just now.
No, but even with that.
And it hasn't come back.
But here's the
thing. So I must wait 20 years.
No, let me tell
you. I'll be
very old. I'll be 60. When the DTI announced this Black Empowerment rebate, right?
And they want to give us 4.5 million rands.
No, they want to give you half on the first 60.
Oh, the rebate.
Yeah, the rebate.
The first, yeah.
Yeah, the DTI is our friend. So even in the first 3 months, they had very few, I won't say the number, they had very few applications. And where we as black people, like, you know, screw ourselves, we are good to complain very quick. Yeah, this doesn't work. And when you speak to those people, how many of you have applied? Zero. None of them have applied for the money. How many of you are actively trying to raise money? None of them. But they will be the first to complain. This is not working.
No, you're right. We do complain a lot.
Yeah.
We do complain a lot.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, we are talking about your film. And you know, your film at the end has a very happy ending.
Yes.
That we think that will be satisfying to the whole audience, Americans and South Africans.
Well, I hope so. You know, but I think I only have to focus on trying to stay true to the story. What happens after that, you know, is just on a prayer.
Okay.
You know.
And casting-wise, how have you gone about casting? You don't have to tell us the people you've cast, but how have you gone about casting? I mean, who are the people that you've decided to use?
I remember seeing you at the cast. Your ass didn't make it. I can tell you.
Don't you be like that, okay? Tumisho, you and I know what's going on.
They put you in your place again.
You weren't chosen.
But nonetheless, I mean, like, you really worked hard at the casting.
Yes, yeah. I did. And I think we found people that we're happy with.
Okay.
But at the same time, like I was saying earlier to you before we got into the studio, I will only really celebrate once the money is in the account.
No, for sure, for sure.
But the people that we are speaking to, we're quite happy with, and we hope for the best. And it may not be a big box office success in the US, but you know, you've got VOD, you've got DVD, and that's really like what we're focusing on.
I think in closing, because we have to go now, here's my thing.
Yes.
I think we need to get to a point where not every movie needs to necessarily make box office.
Exactly.
Because here's why I was talking about that whole just casting Americans in the lead for the sake of it.
Yeah.
When you do that because you're hoping to get a market, what you're then doing is, yes, part of making films is about making money,
yeah.
right? But we're in a film industry in its infancy. At mm-hmm. best, mm-hmm. the new South African film industry is 20 years old,
yeah.
which means we're very young.
Mm-hmm.
The American film industry is more than 100 years old.
Yeah.
It's just been going,
yes.
you know? And not all their movies make box office.
No.
Out of 10 movies, two
mm.
make enough money to pay for the other eight yes. and everything else.
Yes.
In this country, we're so focused on just box office instead mm. of just telling a story
yes.
that the audience will love and that will resonate with the audience, as well as cultivating that audience to understand what are the things to look out for.
Yes.
What do you look out for? What are the cultural motifs in South African films?
Yeah.
And also teaching the international audience as well.
Mm. That we need to sell our culture to the world.
If we just start with selling our culture first
yeah.
and selling our stories and selling our people, the money will follow.
Exactly.
If we were honest about it.
What is our culture? What is our identity?
It's what we decided is
yeah.
right now.
Yes.
And then put it into form.
And we will work it out as we go.
Yeah, and work it out as we go.
Yeah.
But be consistent about it.
Exactly.
The thing is, if you only make a film once every 3 years,
yeah.
it's
not
good
an
enough.
Industry, yeah.
That's not an industry. And you're also not creating that culture.
Mm-hmm.
You need to hit them with 3 or 4 films at least a year.
Exactly.
And that's major films.
Yeah.
Then there has to be at least 8 other just films that just came out and did nothing, but spoke the same kind of cultural language for that year.
Exactly.
And then next year we might we'll obviously enhance it a little bit. We'll make it different there, because at the moment the only thing that is speaking to our audience is soap operas.
But this is exactly how the American market works, because they also do the same sort of culture. There'll be like superhero films. There'll be different themes as we go. That's what we need to do as South Africans.
Thank
but also I
much.
Think the other thing that we need to consider, just in closing, is that, you know, it's not just about making films for theatrical. Also, people, we're trying to build careers and careers outside of South Africa as well.
Yeah.
So sometimes you'll find that there'll be South African producers or directors who will make these films with American actors because they want an American release, because then it opens up their market. Even if that first film bombs, but you'll get picked up by somebody.
Yeah.
So that's also something else to consider.
Well, good luck with your film and all the best. We really look forward to it. And we're so proud of you.
We're going to do a pre-screening, actually.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, we're going to do a pre-screening.
Can I just punt, quickly?
Punt.
Okay,
punt.
So the Durban International Film Festival is happening very, very soon.
Yes,
so please, South Africa.
July, go.
Just go Durban. Register if you're in Durban, or just go to Durban, because
to Durban.
Durban is amazing.
I'm supposed
it's
to go
summer
to Durban.
There.
I'm so sad I'm missing it.
It's summer there. It's beautiful.
Yes.
And then later in the year, there's AFRIF, which is the African International Film Festival in Nigeria.
All right.
If you have films out there as Africans, please submit to AFRIF.
Just submit.
The closing
to
date has not come yet. I don't have it on me yet.
Okay.
But
cool.
Please just get on the website, find out about AFRIF, find out about DIFF, and just try to
Bradley
attend.
Bradley and Sean, if you're listening, if we haven't submitted to AFRIF, please submit to
please
the beginning
submit.
Now.
Yes.
But the beginning will be showing at DIFF, so go check it out.
Great. I look forward to the beginning. It looks amazing.
Thank you. We're out of here. Monabisi, last words.
We
love Dineo.
We love Africa and we love Dineo.
We love Africa
Lineo.
And we love Dineo.
Dineo with an L.
Dineo.
Yes. Mama
and,
Inala.
Keep all of those people waiting, you know. Okay, we really have to go. But I really want to see more of our beautiful South African ladies in film. I want to see people like Pearl. I want to see people like Amanda DuPont. I want to see people like Tumi Morake in a film. I even want to see Jeannie D in a film. I want to act with Jeannie D one day.
I'm sure you do. I'm sure you do.
That's right.
I'm sure you do.
I want to see Boyti in a film.
I'm sure you do.
I want to see Connie in a film.
I'm sure you do.
Who else? Come. Sophie.
Zozi.
So this is not an actress. She doesn't want to act. But she'll finance our shit. You know what I'm saying? Okay, that's us.
Like that.
We're out of here. Goodbye. See you
Bye.
Next week.
Bye. CliffCentral.com